And we are proceeding with the next speaker. Professor Sigmund Schulze took his education in Halle, and later he worked on the history of mathematics at Humboldt University. And since 2000, he is professor for the history of mathematics in Kristiansand in the south of Norway. And today, he was always working very much in Karl-Weierstrass, but today he chose the story about the Weierstrass approximation theorem from 1885, and his lecture 1 year later revisited.
Thank you. I have to find another excuse than Umberto Bottazzini not to speak in German. So in my case, it's because the organizers asked me for speaking in English. The thing is certainly historical research which goes broader than just one theorem, and it's about his lectures, and it is also about Weierstrass as a man. And so I'm glad that the minister this morning underlined the importance also of biographical research and of a nuanced look at personalities, and that people even like the clearly acknowledged Nazi Bieberbach had not only merits in function theory, but also as a researcher on Weierstrass, we have to know. And on the other hand, we have to be really nuanced, and so I have to say that she was not fully informed about van der Waarden, whom we really cannot call in a fascist or a Nazi. The only thing which can be held as a reproach against him is that he stayed in Leipzig during the Nazi years. But nothing more than that. I felt compelled because it's my specialty now in recent years set this record straight. But now to Weierstrass. In a way, my talk is a bit of a rehash, but hopefully, in a good sense, that I found something new to enrich my presentation after 30 years, because I had this edition in 1988, still in the GDR, and ausgewählte Kapitel aus der Funktionenlehre. Of this function, which has a special character, which was already alluded to before, because it is mainly devoted to real function theory, to real analysis, but it has also a second part, complex analysis, and it tries actually to use, Weierstrass tries to use the Weierstrass approximation theorem as a kind of bridge between the two of them, because he kind of developed the analytical function in the second part from the notion of from the Weierstrass approximation theorem, then going for the kind of component functions. But I can't go into this. I had in this context already in 1989 an article in Historia Mathematica, der Beweis des Weierstrass-Approximationssatzes 1885 vor dem Hintergrund der Entwicklung der Fourier-Analysis. And now, we'll go a little bit, at least in the theorem, we have to look what's the parallel here to Fourier analysis? Because it's obviously not a real Fourier analysis in the original sense. So in July 1885, he presented a paper to the Preußische Akademie der Wissenschaften in Berlin, which was printed the same month in the Sitzungsberichte. And there he proved the two following theorems, using also uniform convergence. Any function of a real variable which is continuous in a closed interval can be expanded in a uniformly convergent series of polynomials. And second, any continuous functions of a real variable with period 2 pi can be expanded in a uniformly convergent series of finite trigonometric sums. We see, of course, that's trivial for mathematicians. That is neither a development of a function into a power series, which would kind of be connected to analyticity, but it is also not Fourier analysis in the sense that we have a continuous functions, for instance, which we want to develop into a Fourier series, because we don't make any demands on the kind of unified form of the of this convergence in Fourier's series here. So it is somewhat in between. And as I said, this was a unifying principle for him. So one could, of course, now think, and he thought about it, how one can generalize the Weierstrass approximation theorem, which is, of course, today a backbone still of analysis, into several directions. And one direction is, of course, obvious to extend it to finitely many variables. The other direction concerns the notion of the integral. And because, and that is a similarity with Fourier analysis, the approximating functions appear as integrals of the limit functions multiplied with the transcendent functions, integrals of that. And so the integrals of the original functions which we want to represent comes in as a central notion here into this, which appears then in Fourier analysis as a coefficient in the series, and here it kind of is a basic notion in these approximating functions to the continuous function. So the problem came up: what can one say about representability of this continuous function by if one weakens the condition of continuity? What can we say about the domains, the definition of the function? How can one measure these domains in a sense that one, under exclusion of certain parts of the sets, one can still represent the function as a limit of polynomials? And in this context, of course, it's different from Fourier analysis because we don't have this uniqueness question so easily there, because obviously the approximating functions need not be in any way, these polynomials need not be in any way, the series need not be in any way unique. And so, but we have to recall that Cantor, Georg Cantor, the student of Weierstrass, was inspired by Fourier analysis for his basic notion, introduction into set theory. We, for instance, the notion of the derivation of a point set is connected, it comes from Cantor and is connected to Fourier analysis and his work on the uniqueness of representability. And so later on he introduced the notion of content, which is a kind of upper integral of a point set. So we go not much, but a little bit into the discussion between Weierstrass and Cantor in this respect. So what is new in my article in the Weierstrass volume compared to my original edition? So I published now extensive excerpts from the lectures for the first time into English, because the edition was German. I've come closer to finding the authors of the 1886 lecture notes, which remained unknown to me back 25 years ago. And I found additional information on the role of the Berliner Mathematische Verein, a student organization where they kind of wrote actual lecture notes of Weierstrass lectures, which they had before heard, and also made some education, read books and stuff and discussions. The role of the amateur mathematician and businessman Karl Itzigsohn in the preservation of Weierstrass lecture notes. Most of this is based on new material which I didn't know before from the Middag-Leffler Institute, and to my help came Michael Rorgstedt, and finally, I looked somewhat more closely at the relation between Weierstrass and his student Georg Cantor, because the latter's relation, notion of content, as I mentioned before. So this gives you a kind of updated overview of the distribution of the existing copies of lecture notes of this specific lecture from 1886 in various countries. So we have Gießen, nothing, we find there, which, because they are lost from the Gießen library, but we find allusions to it in the correspondence. We find what I call Lodestein lithograph, it is a lithographic version in Leipzig and in Jerusalem, another one of Benecke. These lithographs have partly copied again by handwriting because they were not readable for Mittag-Leffler, who had ordered a copy from it. It was written in the old German script, and so he needed something in a Latin script. And so at the time, he translated, copied it again by hand, namely Michaelis. And so you can see for yourself what we have here. So there were two brothers, actually, which turned out in my research, either Theodor Lohnstein or his twin brother Rudolf, born both 6th June 1866. They were the ones who obviously wrote these lecture notes after attending the Weierstrass lectures, and both later became medical doctors. They had earlier shown interest in the more numerical aspects of Weierstrass mathematics, which actually comes also up with the Weierstrass approximation theory, because he always says, well, the last goal is the representation of the function. So he looks for this kind of, how can I approximate the function? So, and these people were interested in that aspect too. But we don't have a picture of Rudolf Lohnstein. We have this Michaelis, who I mentioned before, who was a physicist at the time then when he copied for Mittag-Leffler handwritten these lecture notes, because Mittag-Leffler couldn't read them. And the writing of the lecture notes by Lohnstein's brothers, or one of them, was done in the Mathematische Verein at the Berliner Universität, which I found out. You can read there also documentation about in this book, which came out by Lamla in 1908, I think, in this nice logo here, and he gives some more details how they met their beloved teacher Weierstrass and celebrated also his birthday in 1885, and invited him later on, because they were of course not admitted to the official celebration where the professors were only attending. And so the probably most famous student at these lectures was Ludwig Schlesinger, who was a son-in-law of a Weierstrass colleague and former student Lazarus Fuchs. And he said, I personally attended the Weierstrass lectures of 1886 and I have taken notes from them. The lecture room course in the summer of 1886 was rather poorly attended because it was not announced in the official list, because it began several weeks after the official start of the semester. This explains why the content of the lecture course has not become well known. Among others, not his kind of attempt to generalize the notion of the integral. So he wrote to Kovalevskaya that Riemann's definition was usually considered to be most general possible, is insufficient. Then he explains that what he means by this, and he says, in addition, there can be points of discontinuity in countable or non-countable numbers. This has actually then later and also by him even more generalized. We only assume that in any arbitrarily small part of the interval, there are points where the function exists and where the value of the function does not exist, a fixed limit. There one can always find a definition which preserves all properties of the integral which follow from Cauchy's and Riemann's definitions. He says all properties, although later he has to realize it's not all properties. He added, one can conclude this very easily from Cantor's notion of content of an arbitrary point set formulated in volume 4 of Acta. He means Acta Mathematica, but it had been published before in German in the Annalen der Mathematik. Then he writes also to Hermann Amandus Schwarz, in addition, I have to finish my paper on the representation of arbitrary functions by trigonometric series. The paper is connected to important investigations. I've found out that Riemann's definition, which previously was considered the most general possible, is neither sufficiently general nor even acceptable. I have never found out why he says it's not acceptable. We have to think about it. On the contrary, it has to be replaced by a totally different one, in which I found substantial support in Cantor's recent investigations, not those related to transinfinitive numbers. And I highlight this because it's a funny word here. The use of the word transinfinitive
for Weierstrass former student Georg Cantor, which Cantor had transfinite, seems to indicate that Weierstrass was less familiar with or less convinced of by Cantor's more general, by some contemporaries even considered as too philosophical parts of set theory, while he could make good use of Cantor's relatively more traditional notion of the content, Inhalt of point set. Indeed, in my original edition of 1988, I had replaced transinfinite, which I had found in a typewritten transcript of the letter, by transfinite. Right, but that's assuming that it was a typo. This manuscript was actually the typewritten manuscript transcript was done by Bieberbach to record him again. But now for the article, I wanted to be sure, and I checked the original one of the letter, which was provided to me in copy by Reinhard Bölling. So we found out that Weierstrass had even used transinfinitiv, which is even farther away from transfinit. Right, which you find on the bottom there, in red margins, frame. According to Bölling in his Cantor biography in the Jahresbericht of DMV 1997, Cantor had sent Weierstrass's first systematic, if introductory and partly philosophical paper on the theory of transfinite cardinal and ordinal numbers in December 1882, and Weierstrass had not expressed reservations. So this more general philosophical thing. In the resulting publication in the Mathematische Annalen, one finds one of the most famous quotes by Cantor, in which he makes a respectful nod to his teacher. "The essence of mathematics lies precisely in its freedom. Had Gauss, Cauchy, Abel, Jacobi, Dirichlet, Weierstrass, Hermite, and Riemann always been constrained to subject their new ideas to a metaphysical control, we should certainly not now enjoy the magnificent structure of the modern theory of functions." And so he loves him for acknowledging the importance also of these more general things, but somewhat contrary to the announcement in his letter to Schwarz, Weierstrass did not include his generalization of the integral, which he had tentatively done in his lectures. He doesn't include this in a publication. Well, he couldn't do it because it was a year later, but he didn't do it later, also not in his collected works, where he gives an extended version of his paper. And Schlesinger, in his 1926 book, can one read the title, Die Beck'sche Integrale und Fourier'sche Reihen, Schlesinger-Plessner, 1926, on the Lebesgue integral, he explained why Weierstrass' attempt to use Cantor's notion of Inhalt could not succeed in generalizing the Weierstrass approximation theorem to non-continuous functions, because it does not possess additivity, because it's a kind of upper Barbeau integral, contrary to what Weierstrass has written to Kovalevskaya. Also Hawkins, in the probably best book on the history of the Lebesgue integral, refers to Weierstrass' failed attempt, because partly the correspondence had already been published, so although the edition of the function was not available, of the lecture was not available, Hawkins at the time could already read this correspondence with Kovalevskaya and Schwarz in some publications, Acta Mathematica, and so he knew he was on the wrong path here. So, and I think, because to be short here, I just want to finish with some other of these kind of scattered findings which I had in my article. This is Karl Itzig's own, who nobody knows, although at the time he was kind of known as a regular student of Weierstrass. He never made an exam, but he functioned as a translator, for instance, of Cauchy's Cours d'Analyse, which is a rather good translation, I was told, and he was an inveterate supporter. He had apparently also private means, similar to Kronecker, and he figures as a businessman and a student of Weierstrass. He does everything for him, organizes his birthday party, organizes this photo album, which Reinhard Bölling has edited. So he was really inveterate, and then I don't know, I only find out in the Jewish Jüdische Gemeinde here that he left it at some point, the Jüdische Gemeinde, in 1896, I think, and so then one finds a lot of things today on the internet, as you know. So I found this article in Naturwissenschaftliche Wochenschrift of 1898 with the title Ein Beitrag zur naturwissenschaftlichen Erkenntnistheorie, Berufsbegründung der Soziologie, Weierstrasschen mathematischer Grundanschauung. Do I have a book available of the collection here right now? So if I have 1 minute, I would quote the last thing. Here, but it's in page 266, so which gives you maybe an idea of what kind of argumentation he wants to build in sociological respect on Weierstrass. So to say, he was a supporter of the Society for Ethics, of German Society of Ethical Behavior, or something similar, where co-founder was the astronomer and politician Wilhelm Förster, and they were, among other things, they were for the separation of religion and ethics, so they were kind of more on the leftist spectrum, also supported 8 hours working day. And so he was kind of more to the leftist of the spectrum, political spectrum, Itzigson. But he, of course, he doesn't use any mathematics in this article. He just wants to make a general nod that one has to be thorough and axiomatic. So I do this in German now. That's his concluding passage, when he says, wenn man den Zusammenhang der Erscheinungen klarzulegen bemüht ist und sich dabei als Mittel für theoretische und analytische Gedankenoperationen bedient, so stehen derartige Betrachtungen auf sicherem Boden, sobald man sie auf die einfachsten Begriffe zurückzuführen vermag, welche die allgemeine Größenlehre, und zwar sowohl die diskrete wie die kontinuierliche, uns bietet, weil nur alsdann der Nachweis der Übereinstimmung des arithmetischen, geometrischen und physikalischen Abhängigkeitsbegriffs möglich sein dürfte. Ob die Zurückführung auf zusammengesetztere Begriffe geeignet sein dürfte, das Material für tiefere und feinere Einsicht in den Zusammenhang der Erscheinungen des Kosmos, den Menschen eingeschlossen, abzugeben. Herr Geheimrat Förster weist auf die platonische Harmonielehre hin. Das ist eine Frage, deren naturwissenschaftlich-mathematische Beantwortung noch ausstehen dürfte. Das ist sozusagen seine Schlussfolgerung. Er macht natürlich keine mathematische Argumentation, aber er will sozusagen irgendwie etwas dazu beitragen, dass die auch Ethik und Humanwissenschaften letzten Endes auf mathematische Grundlagen gestellt werden mögen. Und damit möchte ich abschließen. Danke.
Questions or Fragen? Oh, I really don't see any. Ah, there's somebody. Okay.
So actually, it's a little bit about the remark you made in the beginning, and I would say that we appreciated your review on the notices of AMS about the way history of mathematics should be made. Thank you.
I don't see any more questions. So let's thank Professor Sigmund Schulze once more.